The Business on RTE Radio 1 with AIB. It takes a certain kind of brave to run a business. We see it, we back it.
But first, this past week put the spotlight firmly back on the crumbling stability of Ireland's housing market with news of global property firms buying up significant chunks of housing estates. And also this week there was much talk of the new apparently affordable housing schemes. In a few moments we'll be looking at the opportunities for people to move outside of our cities. But first we're joined by Orla Hegarty, lecturer in the School of Architecture, Planning and Environment at UCD to talk about the housing situation. Orla, you're very welcome. First of all, there seems to be enormous pressure on the government in response to this story that broke last weekend about a particular fund buying up a housing estate in Maynooth. But do you think that there was really grounds for the government to be surprised by that, given the policies that have been pursued over the last few years?
I think why it hit the headline, maybe it's because it's a housing estate, and whereas this had been going on with predominantly with apartment developments for the last number of years, people didn't really see that in the same way. But to see a suburban housing estate being bought up and to see what that means for the local community in terms of people who are looking to buy, I think has really hit home with people that long-term renting may be the only option for some people, and that has fairly significant implications right across society and also into the future for the cost of housing, pensions and everything else.
Yeah, I mean, renting has been a big part of government policy over the last number of years. After the crash, we had several hundred thousand people in negative equity, and there was a sort of a push towards saying, well, look, we don't want people to overpay for houses. If we can get our renting infrastructure right, why not adopt something a bit more like a continental European model? And that seems to have been part of the thinking.
I think it was, and I suppose there was a logic maybe back 10 years ago when there were a lot of maybe buy-to-let landlords who were mortgaged and the state needed social housing. So putting people into those buy-to-lets, in the HAP scheme maybe made sense because it supported the banks and it supported those accidental landlords in some cases, and it provided social housing. I think the difficulty was that coming out of that time, it wasn't, I suppose, de-risked in how, what it might mean into the future. And now we have a situation where, following that model, local authorities in some cases are paying 2,500 or more on leases to kind of replicate that model, but in a very, very different market.
Yeah, because if that was the thinking at the time, there is a however there, and the however is a lot of international investment funds came in, they were incentivized using tax breaks in order to do that, and there wasn't really any kind of limits on what they could do. So therefore, they're totally free to come in and buy up an entire housing estate, which means that potential first-time buyers don't even have a look in.
They are free, and I suppose it's been strongly encouraged. What people mightn't realise, I think, is that they also have reduced standards for buy-to-let apartments. So they are lower standards than buy-to-sell apartments, which that also incentivises the money into building something that's cheaper and that's of a lower standard. So a huge amount of money has flooded in. I was just looking at the numbers. In 2019, 2.4 billion was spent on apartments in Dublin, and another 1.4 billion last year. So these are really substantial holdings. And I think the other thing that people mightn't realise is that although, in the overall scheme, they might be a small number of rentals in Dublin or not the majority, in particular areas, there's over concentrations, and those landlords can then set the rent effectively in that area because they're very dominant. And, if you look across some of the schemes, there's a very strong pattern there now of rents being well over 2,000 a month for a two-bedroom apartment. And to put that into perspective of earnings, your rent shouldn't really be more than a third of your take home. So people would need a household take home of over 70,000 a year to be paying 2,000 a month in rentals. So it's a very small niche market in some ways.
And when it comes to solutions, Orla, let's say specifically for this investment fund issue and buying up estates of houses, there's talk about taking away some of the tax incentives that might stop them from doing it, changing planning rules that you'd have 20% of any new estate is for social housing and affordable housing, and then another 30% is allocated for first-time buyers, which means that a fund could only buy a maximum of 50%. What do you think of those solutions? Would they work?
Well, I suppose the tax situation is not in my direct area, but I have, from listening to other commentators, it's clear that there isn't a level playing pitch. So the favouritism, I suppose, needs to be taken out of it. In terms of planning, that can be quite a blunt tool in terms of enforcing it and getting results from it. I think more broadly, we need to look at more competition in the market. The EU Commission, in a report just before Christmas, commented about the very high margins and high land prices in Dublin and suggested that that's a result of a lack of competition. And the way, I think the best tool for the government to do that would be to open up the market more, get more local SME developers involved, give them access to lands under licence, seed fund them to start more development and get people working in parallel on these larger sites rather than waiting for one developer to start at phase one and spend 5 years building. Have multiple people at the same time, and that level of competition would naturally bring down prices and bring up quality.
Part of the argument that the government has made over a number of years would have been that a lot of the local developers were broke and they couldn't raise the finance from bank or from other sources in order to develop out land banks that they had. And that was one of the reasons why they were happy to see all of this international money coming in.
I think that's the case. I think, you know, people might, you know, I suppose we need to acknowledge that there's very little competition because there are very high barriers to entry for new people coming in terms of getting finance and land. And that creates a sort of difficult situation. Also, I think a lot of this policy has really been about restoring the property sector and not restoring the construction industry. There's been very little support for the residential construction industry to actually re-establish or for new players to come in. There, I'm sure there are plenty of people in the sector who would be happy to start their own SME development company if those barriers to land and finance were removed. And that would keep the skill here, particularly if we have a downturn now with the office and house building and student accommodation sectors.
And finally,
it would keep work in the regions.
Yeah, finally, Orla, just are we a little bit stuck on the idea that do we want to be an owner-occupier society as we've tended to be in the past? Do we want to be a continental European renter society? Because if we go down the renting road long-term for life, we need to look at things like pensions, for example, because people, after they retire, they'd still be paying rent right through, wouldn't they?
Very much so. I mean, our system is really set up on assuming that the majority of people won't have high housing costs in their retirement, and a private rental model is very, very different. It would require higher pensions. I think also the European rental model has a lot of protections. One of the reasons people in Ireland look to buy is because it's very precarious in the rental sector, and they never know from one year to the next if they'll have to move. It's very hard to become established in a community, whereas in continental Europe, people often have, you know, much stronger tenancy rights and can be there for a long time. It's also interesting that in other parts of Europe they have, you know, put controls on this. Germany has banned REITs owning residential property, and Denmark, which is also in the EU, requires people to be permanent resident or have lived in Denmark for 5 years in order to buy residential property. And even for an EU national to go to Denmark, they need to be working in Denmark and prove that they are in order to be entitled to buy a home there. So there are lots of other levers, I think, that are possible within the EU to ensure that housing is kept for people who live and work here.
Okay. Well, Orla Hegarty, lecturer in the School of Architecture, Planning and Environment at UCD, thank you very much for joining us on the programme.